Before we get started this week, there's been some stuff going on in Craig's life that we wanted to talk about and offer up in prayer. Craig, did you want to give us let us know what's going on so that we can pray for you?
Yeah, sure. This is just so that people can pray if they're the praying types. My wife and I are expecting our second child, and we had a scan this week, which was pretty routine, just to make sure things were in the right position, because the placenta was in the wrong spot. Anyway, the scan revealed that there was fluid in the brain, basically, which there's meant to be fluid in the brain, but there's a buildup. There's like a blockage somewhere or something that's causing extra fluid to build up in the brain, which is can create a whole stack of problems, from pretty much the worst case scenario of what you can think of to the other end of the spectrum is relatively good outcome, normal outcome. But at the moment, we're just kind of in this waiting period where we don't know exactly what's happening in terms of how bad things are or whatever. We know that it's serious, but we don't know, I guess, until the baby's born, what the actual ongoing outcome will be. And so we're working with doctors and stuff to try and, we're meeting with them to try and work out our way forward and all that kind of thing. So if people could just be in prayer for the best possible outcome and for God's will to be done, that would be good. We'd really appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah. So we'll keep that little Ellis baby in our prayers, and on to the show. Hello and welcome to episode 124 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
I'm Craig.
And this is Pink.
And this week we're going to be talking about the GDPR in Europe, the General Data Protection Regulation. This is something new that's coming out that we figured we should give everybody details on and discuss from a biblical perspective. So without further ado, let's get started. So the GDPR, this is a new European Union regulation. Had you guys heard of this before I brought it up in the Slack a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, because I was already getting emails saying we're updating our privacy policy.
Yes. Yes. So if you have been getting a ton of emails with clearer terms and conditions about the people's privacy policies, this is the reason why, and we will get into that. So the General Data Protection Regulation, this is something that will be in place by May, I think, 25th of 2018. This was debated and stuff for like 4 to 6 years, something like that. And was finally voted on and put into place 2 years ago to become enacted here this month. So it's been in the works for a while, but I had only heard about it a few months ago. And what this, basically the reason that we're even talking about this, as none of us are people from Europe or in Europe, is because the General Data Protection Regulation applies to all companies who serve European customers. So we'll get through, we'll do a couple of big things you should know here. So it applies to all companies that exist inside the European Union and serves customers from the European Union. So that means like Apple and Google and like all these big tech companies have to rejigger their services to comply with this regulation such that they can serve their European customers. And actually, I've started to see tweets from companies who have been like, sorry, people from Europe, you are, we're not going to be able to serve you once May 25th rolls around because of GDPR. And I guess we'll actually get into that in a little bit once we get into like the implications. So the main idea for this regulation is to make it easier for consumers to control their data. So we've had a lot of conversation recently about Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica. Yeah, the Cambridge Analytica fiasco, where people's data was being harvested that they didn't really understand or know about, and data was transferring hands. And so the goal of this is to make it as easy as possible for you to understand what your data is, what data is being collected, and how to see it and how to erase it. So first off, that means that the terms and conditions need to be easy to read and understand. So everybody's had the contracty terms and conditions that is, you know, 12 pages long that you just click through. So this is meant to help it be easier for you to understand so that you're not signing away something that you don't understand. It also must be as easy to withdraw consent as it is to give it. So if someone is asking for consent to access your, you know, to take care of your data, then it must also be as easy to say, hey, stop, erase all my data. I would like to stop giving my data, please.
Is that literal? Like, it literally has to be the same number of steps? Because, like, a lot of unsubscribes and stuff, there's, like, a two-step. Like, you know, click unsubscribe and then choose what you want to unsubscribe from and then click unsubscribe a second time. So if you have a one-time opt-in, do you also have to have a one-time opt-out?
That's a good question. And one thing about the GDPR is that a lot of it is fairly vague in how it's worded. Like it works in generalities. Probably.
Well, that's good for legislation, you know.
Yeah. Well, that would be. I'm guessing that's in hopes that companies will go above and beyond to make sure that they're in complying. But yeah, I imagine we'll get some case law out of the next couple of years, so we'll see how that goes. In case of a data breach, data controllers and processors, so like the companies that hold your data and the companies that are processing your data, like maybe a MailChimp, for instance, must notify their customers of any risk of their data being compromised within 72 hours. So this seems very significant. So like a company can't just hold on to the fact that they've had a data breach for, you know, 6 months to 3 years, cough Yahoo, and many other companies that have had this happen to them, Uber. So many companies have had this issue. This calls for a very serious structure change within the company to make sure that they're able to notify customers of risk without like having further risk to their company and all that. So that's interesting. Customers have the right to request information regarding their data, such as if their personal data is being used and how. And you can also request a copy of the data for free. So, like, for instance, on Facebook now, you might have been able to do this for a little bit, but certainly now you can go to Facebook and download a copy of all your data and see what Facebook has on you, you know, see what they have. And you know, make decisions from that, which that provided some entertaining tweets after the Cambridge Analytica thing when people were downloading a bunch of information and Facebook was apparently keeping like call logs and stuff like on Android phones, because I don't think you can do that on an iPhone, but like some basically as much data as they can get their hands on. Let's see. Customers can demand that their information is erased at any time. So, this is probably also somewhere in the range of it must be very easy to erase your data, like the withdrawing consent type of deal. So, that is one of the provisions. And as a customer, you can obtain and reuse your personal data for your own purposes by transferring it across different IT environments. Basically, it means you can ask for your data and use that to go somewhere else. It would encourage companies to make it easier to transfer your information. So that's about the main things that I was seeing for the GDPR. There's obviously a lot more in the paperwork, like as far as details go, but that's like the big highlights. So as far as implications of this, Again, we're seeing all of the emails, all of the emails from everyone, which strikes me as unfortunate that we're getting all of these terms and conditions at the same time, even though they may be easy to read, because I don't know about you guys, but I'm not reading 20 terms and conditions emails in the course of a week, no matter how easy it is to read.
And so was one of the requirements, at least how I understood the article, and maybe I misunderstood, but anyway, so one of the requirements was that you didn't consent to the whole thing as a bulk. You had to consent to individual. How I pictured it was like on phones, at least on Android, it says, will you allow this app to use your pictures? Yes or no. Will you allow this app to use your location? Yes or no. And so you have to consent to different things individually instead of just saying, will you allow this app to do whatever it wants? Yes. And so is that how terms of conditions will work now, or did I misread that? They just have to be more simple?
It would just have to be simpler to read and understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you gotcha. Also, I forgot this. I didn't put this in the notes, but you have to be able to provide a path of consent. So you have to have proof that, yes, this person consented to me collecting this data. Because this is our system and this is what they had to consent to. So that's why you're getting like the people sending you even like, so I'm not even just getting terms and conditions emails. I'm also getting like, hey, would you like to stay subscribed to our email? And I don't like, they haven't emailed me in like forever. This is just like, I'm an email shoved somewhere in the back, you know, the back corners of their database. And, so they found it and it was like, okay, we need to get consent from this guy. That sort of thing. So
it's probably a really good way of keeping people accountable. As in, like, I guess as the internet's grown and terms and conditions and privacy policies and stuff have kind of changed a little bit over time, you know, with the introduction of cookies being a big thing and Facebook Pixel and all these kind of things that kind of track data in different ways. People have probably augmented their privacy policies somewhat, but to now have something that, at least in the EU, is kind of a refresher, like, no, this is the new standard that everyone has to come back to and abide by, is probably not a bad thing to try and sort of, I mean, there's a lot of work involved to get it up and running and get, everyone has to do their own due diligence to make sure they're complying. But I think in terms of, in principle, I think a sort of a large scale tightening of the screws a little bit in terms of how people's individual privacy is protected is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. That, and it keeps like big companies like Facebook very open and honest too. Like, I mean, Facebook is kind of the whipping boy for this right now, but it is that for a good reason. Like Facebook,
it comes with the territory.
Yeah, it thrives. Like Facebook exists entirely because it can use your data to do things with it, like selling ads or you know, connecting you with different things that you like, that it thinks that you like, or you know, all this stuff. So, yeah, and obviously it's a big transition for all these large companies too. Not easy to get. Like I was reading through some of the details and like listening to TED Talks this past week, or not TED Talks, but like little seminars on GDPR, and woof, I am glad I do not have to take care of making sure to comply with this, because it is a very stringent regulation. And another, this is kind of a tangential, but still relevant implication, aside from privacy, the EU is essentially able to regulate the planet on this.
Because I thought that was what interesting.
Yeah. Somehow, I don't know how they're going to enforce that US companies who serve EU customers will pay fines if they don't comply with GDPR. But I guess somehow they're figuring it
owned,
out.
The data is still owned by the person whose data it is.
Right.
So if an American company is using it in a way that's deemed illegal in the UK, I guess it, I don't know, is it kind of like deportation laws where like it's illegal in one country that the people are involved in? So it,
yeah,
I don't know. It seems strange.
It is very strange. I don't know how legally they're doing this, but
It wouldn't be deportation because that's back to your home country. But you know what I mean?
Right,
like, seems like they must have some way of enforcing that law because it applies to the person on the receiving end, to the person on the service delivery end. And yeah, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. That does seem like a different way of doing things.
Like, I can see how they can enforce this stuff with companies like Apple and Google and like the global companies that have tons of customers in every single country on the planet. But like, if you have like, I don't know, like a small Chilean company that has a couple of EU customers that file a complaint and be like, hey, these guys aren't GDPR compliant. Like, are you able to enforce that fine? Like, so that's something that I don't know. But will be very interesting to keep an eye on.
I also noticed, and you can correct me if I read this wrongly, but I think I saw in one of the articles that was floating around this week that the fines themselves are quite large. And people were talking about 4%, up to 4% of, I think it's annual global profit or something like that. But then one of the articles said, or $20 million, whichever is more.
Yes.
So for a small Chilean company,
$20 million
yeah. It's a small business. Like, how do you even, you know, you need some good insurance, I guess.
Exactly.
And then whether insurance companies will guard against, you know, will kind of protect against this kind of, like, I'm talking business insurance. Like, will they cover breaches of this or not? Or will they just go, nah, you have to get that in order before we'll, not
yeah.
sure.
So there was, I got to find the tweet somewhere. There's definitely a company that is, that like something that just started up, like a website that you can go to sign up for that will monitor your, that you can have it, you know, embed a little JavaScript something on your website that it will monitor like, okay, who is here from Europe? And if they are here from Europe, we will show you a page that says, I'm sorry, we cannot serve you. You are not welcome on our site. Go away. Because of GDPR, because people don't have these resources. So, of course, that gets into the whole, like, does the government have the right to regulate companies this hard and that sort of stuff? And I don't honestly have a good discussion for that, but that is also a part of this discussion that I expect people will be quite vocal about in the Slack, which I look forward to.
It does seem like that's where a lot of the, I guess, the contention will come from, is who has the right to enforce this stuff across geographical boundaries. Because again, we've talked before about, you know, the fact that there is no such thing as like a global UN for the internet or something like that. So I would imagine, like you said, Derek, we're probably going to get a whole bunch of case law examples from this over the next 12 months as sort of things go down. And that will be one of the most interesting things to me to see is how they manage that sort of international prosecution side of things.
It seems unfair in my mind to the people who are in the EU, like, because privacy is a consent thing, as a lot of what the law deals with. And so just thinking if, say, Facebook didn't comply and they're in America, so they maybe don't have to. And a person in the EU wanted to use Facebook, like, it shouldn't, in my mind, I see it weird that EU will say, Facebook, you can't exist within the EU because you don't meet our laws. It seems like they would be like, we can't enforce this because you're not within the EU. And so anyone within the EU just has to recognize, like, well, you're going out of our safety net if you use this company. So it seems like it should be up to me if I want to use something. My government shouldn't be saying, you can't use this product because it's not safe for you. It's like, isn't that my choice in some ways? But I guess not. I mean,
there's these things called illegal drugs that they do that with. I think, and that's the thing, is that the we treat tech so fundamentally differently to most other areas of life. Like, people assume because it's not tangible, it's technological. Like, it's something that I can choose to interact with, and maybe no one else would even know that I'd done that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're buying a new car from a dodgy provider that doesn't have put VIN numbers on their vehicles and stuff like that, isn't up to safety standards. Like, you online, you can do things and make decisions about things pretty quickly and relatively incognito. But we kind of assume that we just have the right to do that with whatever, unless it's like really, really illegal. But, you know, in general, in terms of which companies we get services from and stuff, we kind of think we have the right to just choose that. And this is, I guess, yeah, like the government saying, well, no, we already have restrictions in other areas of life. So we're now expanding that out to technology. But it does feel wrong.
Yeah, that is a good picture. Like, the governments will shut down companies that don't meet safety standards. And so, and we don't think, like you said, well, I should be allowed to drive that car if I want to. Like, it's my right to buy from a shady place. Yeah, that's a really good metaphor, I think.
It's only got one wheel, but you know, it's a good car.
There is the positive aspect of the fact that the companies that are complying with this, the rest of the world will mostly get to partake on the wonderful goodness that that comes from this for the consumer. Because like Apple and Google are just choosing to, you know, spread that, like, do the same thing across everything, as far as I know, and many other companies as well. Just because, I mean, you might as well, while you're putting in the effort. Facebook, I think, is a little bit different. I think Facebook isn't quite doing the same thing everywhere else in the world that it is in the EU. But of course, that's Facebook, and Facebook's going to Facebook. But yeah, so all kinds of interesting things going on. Let's take a break while I welcome our sponsor this week, which is Valley Vintage Shop, where you can get soaps, balms, and oils made the vintage way. Whatever you need in the realm of skin or hair care, Valley Vintage has you covered with all-natural, handmade products. I really like their stuff. Got some handmade soap a while back, which is always nice. I've been using their beard balm and oil for a while. That's good stuff. And it is Mother's Day coming right up this coming week. And if you haven't gotten anything for the mothers in your life, you got to get on that. And Valley Vintage Shop is a fantastic place to start. You can peruse all of their fine wares on their website at valleyvintageshop.com and use our code TECH for 10% off your order. There's hair serums and balms, room and body sprays, lip balm, bath bombs. Bleh, bomb and balm, they're kind of the same. There's a difference. And know that you're taking care of your environment while you're taking care of the people in your life, because everything is packaged in recyclable material. So again, go to valleyvintageshop.com and use our code TECH for 10% off your order. Thanks to Valley Vintage for sponsoring us this week. So let's talk biblical implications, or what the Bible talks about privacy and stuff like this. One interesting thing that I discovered in researching all of this is that Europe tends to think of privacy as being a fundamental human right. And I don't know about you guys, but whenever someone says the phrase fundamental human right, like, all of a sudden, like, my antennas start going up, and I'm like, hold on there. Before you start defining fundamental human rights, we gotta have basis for our claims here. Because that tends to be a way that a lot of perhaps well-meaning but ill-advised or just wrong regulation goes into effect. So in my research on looking at what the Bible has to say about our privacy as humans and whether we deserve it, I kept coming up with verses like Luke 12, 2-3, where nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in private rooms shall be proclaimed on the housetops. Jeremiah 23, 24, can a man hide himself in secret places so that I cannot see him, declares the Lord? Do I not fill heaven and earth, declares the Lord? That's a good pro-privacy verse right there. And I have more, but basically it's just more of that. What have you guys discovered as far as learning about personal privacy when it comes to the Bible?
Yeah, as you said there, like from God's point of view, privacy definitely is not a right that he keeps for us, you know, like as far as he's not like, oh, I can't watch Ryan and what he's doing because I need to make sure he remains private. And I think that Luke verse, I obviously don't know how it's all going to play out, but it's a really good picture for people considering, am I sinful? It's like, all right, just imagine this verse. And well, at least what it sounds like is that at some point at the judgment, everything you've ever thought and everything you've ever done and everything you've ever said is going to be displayed on a big screen for all to see. Now, whether or not that is what happens, like, what do you think about that? How would that make you feel? And I think very quickly we realize that our good doesn't outweigh our bad in that situation. We're like, oh, I don't want people to see that. You know, if our good outweighed our bad, we'd be like, yeah, show them all. They'll see how good of a person I am. But like, no, you don't want to.
No.
So I think, yeah, as far as in God's eyes, or from God's point of view, it's not a right. But as far as just dealing with other people on earth, one good verse I found was Proverbs 12:23. It says, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims folly. And there are other things about like not interacting with gossipers or slanderers. And there's like multiple verses in Proverbs about using discretion. And so the Bible does encourage us not to just shout everything out about ourselves to the world. And while technology wasn't a method to do it, I'm sure there were other ways that they were concerned about their privacy in those times for the Proverbs to have these verses about discretion and concealing certain knowledge.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that difference there, that when the Bible talks about our relation to privacy, as far as God's concerned, we don't have any. We have no right to it. God knows everything and all that. And any right that I think we do, or any wisdom that would speak to us being having privacy or pursuing privacy, comes as a relationship to the fall. That I mean, what's the reason that I would need to hide any of my financial info from anyone? Like, because someone might want to use it to gain for themselves, to, you know, covet theft and steal. Yeah, exactly. Commandment violations and all of that.
But so in light of the fall, do we think that, would you say there's, because I think that it seems to me there's a pretty clear distinction between privacy before God and privacy before men.
Right.
Mm. So as in like God doesn't guarantee us, and nor would it be logical for him to, if he's meant to be omniscient, to guarantee us personal privacy between him and us. Like he does know us intimately and he knows everything about us. And like Tank was saying, he knows everything we've ever done, good or bad. Heck, he knows the number of hairs on my head, which I would never want to be bothered counting. But when it comes to people and our relationships with other people, do you think that because of the fall, God sort of ordains, or not ordains, sees a certain amount of privacy as wisdom, you know, like because of the world that we're living in and the things that we're dealing with in terms of, like you were saying, Derek, possible the wickedness of men's hearts, basically, and women. Yeah, the wickedness of people's hearts, like that he kind of, there are certain aspects of our lives that it just makes sense. I think it would be classed as wisdom to keep private, or at least, yeah, to have a level of sort of protection against just the average Joe finding out all of the information about you in every single area of life. That just seems like a smart move. And maybe if the world was perfect, we wouldn't need that. But it seems like we don't.
Right. Like it seems to me that most of what privacy protects us against is people trying to gain power or that sort of thing, like that selfish, that lust for power, that lust to control people such that you can, or to, you know, that sort of stuff. I mean, privacy can definitely be used in a sinful manner because, you know, if you're hiding your own sins when you should be confessing, you know, making those sins right, you know, that's a bad use of privacy. But there's clearly,
we can never fully make our sins right, though. That's what right, Jesus right, right. did for us.
Yes, of course.
Just to right. inject that in there in case people misunderstand what you're saying. I think I know what you're saying.
To be clear, repent and believe in Christ's, you know, work on the cross, who has, you know, saved you from your sins.
I know what you mean.
And be sanctified, you know, and pursue that righteousness. Right? I'm still not heretical, right?
Yeah, no, still good. Okay. I think what you said was fine, but the phrase that you used, some people might have taken as you were trying to sort of work your own salvation.
Okay.
You know, like in a bad way, in like a I can make my sins right again type way.
Which, yes. Yes. Catholicism.
That's why Jesus died. So anyway.
Yes, yeah. So thank you for the clarification there. But when we're dealing with other people who are trying to sin against us that want to be able to that their lust for money or power or whatever causes them to want to use us in a manner that is bad, privacy is a safeguard against that, and I think is wise. So
I also while you were speaking then, Derek, I was thinking like, because some of the passages or the verses Tank brought up were interesting, but it doesn't seem to be, like, Jesus never speaks on personal privacy, right? Like, there's no sort of passage in the Bible that we can go to and say, this is what, like, this is exactly what this is saying about this issue.
Right.
But I think the way that I'm sort of thinking of it is that looking at even the life of Jesus and the disciples, the apostles of the New Testament church, Jesus was pretty keen on times of privacy. Like, he would retreat from the crowds and go and try and be by himself or try and be away from lots of people. And we see that in the garden as well, as he's preparing to go to the cross. So there was an aspect of his character and his life that was sort of somewhat guarded in terms of having some level of, I don't know, alone time, you know, time with the Father, but not time where he was just being a public person all the time and sharing everything with everyone in terms of the way that he interacted. But then there was also, he also, you know, frequently was out in public speaking to people. Like, that was his work, like that was his mission. He was active in doing that. And then the church is, we're not made to be completely solitary people who keep everything to ourselves and don't interact with other people. Obviously, we're made for relationships. And the church is, I think, kind of an in-between between our times of personal solitude and our things that we do keep intentionally between us and God, I guess. And the wider world, where it's actually just not helpful and downright unwise to go sharing every single piece of information that there is about us. But like you were saying, Derek, if we're keeping, if we're not confessing our sin to God and when we're appropriate to others, then that's, you know, that is something we're commanded to do. So within the church, there is a level of, privacy that is maybe a little bit relaxed compared to, you know, it's kind of in between those two other spheres, mm-hmm. like our personal one-on-one relationship with God and our public life. The church seems like something God has put in place to ensure that we don't retreat into ourselves and kind of hide everything and become very obsessed by our own personal dealings and privacy and have that kind of as an idol. The church is a place mm-hmm. where we are called to be in a certain level of and a certain depth of relationship with other believers as we are sort of discipled together and sanctified together. But there is a difference between the way that we interact with people in our church family compared to how we interact with the wider world in terms of, you know, what we would share and what would be appropriate to share with those people and those kinds of things. So maybe that's a good model for thinking of privacy. Privacy isn't bad. It's also not something that we have full rights to be completely private in every area of life and not share anything with anyone.
Right.
As believers, we are called to share certain things with other believers. And sure, we can share other things with non-believers. You know, we can evangelize, we can go about our work and those kinds of things and have friendships and all those kinds of good things. But yeah, I think maybe having that sort of, that's how I'm kind of in my mind, having sort of a threefold view of privacy for the Christian is that's kind of framing up as a somewhat helpful way to look at it for me.
I really like what Derek said about the reason for privacy being a result of the fall. In that way, when we think of of Proverbs encouraging prudent man to conceal knowledge, you can really think about like why do we need to conceal certain knowledge? Is just thinking, all right, what is if I reveal this to whoever, what would they need this knowledge for? What would be the point of them having this knowledge? And if it's for theft, or if it's for using that knowledge for power, or if it's even just for them to compare and use it for a pride perspective, like any of those reasons, we really shouldn't want people to know our knowledge. But then, as Craig was saying, within the church, we're able to, the effects of the fall are decreased, I guess. I don't know how to say that exactly, but the idea being that people aren't going to be wanting to use that knowledge for evil, but for good. And so we can think in the church, like Craig was saying, we could be much more open, but we should still be prudent. And like, if I just meet a person on the first day of church, I'm not going to share all my secrets, because it's still that question of why would they need this knowledge? And so as we get deeper with people, we can use kind of that mindset of, I need to be prudent with this. And the reason I need to be prudent is to protect what could happen because of sin, because of the fall. Mm-hmm. But if there's a benefit that is gained by sharing this with someone I don't feel the need to be guarded around, then there's no reason, there's few reasons not to share. If I could be benefited, if they pray for me, if they give me advice, or if I could be encouraging them with my testimony. So yeah, I think that's a really good, both of those kind of combined in my head seems like a really good way to deal with privacy for our personal lives.
And before we wrap up, I kind of wanted to put in a quick thing about religious persecution, because privacy often comes up, like the Big Brother tends to come up in conversations about religious persecution and the lack of privacy and all this stuff. And I want to remind people of the passage in Matthew 10. This is like the, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. This is, Jesus is sending out the 12 disciples, giving them authority to drive out spirits and heal disease and sickness and stuff. But verses 26 to 28 are particularly impactful. So do not be afraid of them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be disclosed, or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. And it goes on to, you know, that even the hairs of your head are numbered, all that stuff. So we have a God who is much more powerful than any adversary we have on earth. And that privacy is not the end all be all to our protection, to our protecting ourselves or our families or our churches. Like, we have an almighty God who will protect us in the case of religious persecution. If you would like to connect with us or talk about this episode and talk with the people who are already in our community and discussing things all the time, you can join our Slack team workspace thingy at slack.techreformation.com. You can sign up for an account there, or if you already have an account, we have a link to send you to the Slack there. We would love to get your opinion and hear what you have on the topic. So it's always a great place for discussion. Again, that's slack.techreformation.com.
So also our website, techreformation.com. You can see past shows and topics.
And hit us up on Twitter at Tech Reformation.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back. Joy.